Animal Gab Radio. We've got talk with a tail. Welcome to Animal Gab Radio. I'm Asa Cody, artist, animal advocate, pet chef. This talk with a tail is Scary Beasties, from myth to urban legend. And welcome, Debbie Twombly.
Thank you.
I'm so happy that you are doing this with me and that you're so interested in playing with monsters.
It's an honor. I've always enjoyed monsters. You know, I live out in Brownsmead where you never know what's going to creep out of the woods.
Or you know, I've heard that about that place.
Or come out of the ground.
Now, Debbie, for those of you who do not know, and I can't imagine anyone around here who does not know, is a children's programmer for over 33 years. So thank you for that.
It keeps me young.
Oh, you bet. And also you are a teacher in the local schools.
I've taught in the local schools for over 30 years now.
My goodness. Well, thank you for
a fabulous job.
You bet. And it is vital. Well, thank you. And enjoy.
I will enjoy.
Okay. Happy Halloween.
Of infancy through trembling years of youth, long murky middle age and final hours long in the tooth. Here's the hundred names of terror, creature you love the least, picture his name before you and exorcise the beast. You rode up and down through history, specter with tales to tell. In the darkness when the campfire's dead, to each his behind your shoulder, if you feel his eyes to feast, you can witness now the ever-changing nature of the beast. Be still. Be still. Be still. Be still.
Beastie by Jethro Tull. From the beginning of our history, we humans have enjoyed willfully scaring ourselves to death. As if there are not already too many things out there to be frightened of, stories about monsters have always been part of the global literature. Vicarious fear is thrilling, but thrills don't explain the source content of the oral tradition. Why beasts? Our coexistence with the amazing animals on this planet, especially our competitive predators, led us to perceive their mystery as supernatural. We must have viewed their strength in gigantic terms. And perhaps these myths are our subconscious attempt to triumph over the natural food chain. Beowulf, written in the 9th century BCE, is amongst the oldest and most enduring tales of the battle between man and beast. It is visceral and timeless, fear, courage, rage, and loss.
50 years after Beowulf's battle with Grendel's mother, a slave steals the golden cup from her lair. When the dragon sees the cup has been stolen, it leaves its cave in a rage, burning everything in sight. All men run to come fight the dragon, but Beowulf tells them he will fight alone and that they should wait on the barrow. The dragon came raging, a wild stranger, seeking hated men, his enemies. Hot, gleaming fire waves with blaze billows burned Beowulf's shield board to its edges. Ground in the grip of the fire, his armor failed, but still he advances and strikes at the dragon. He smote so soundly that his sword stood in the skull of the beast by hatred driven. But the sword was shivered by the bony head. The old and iron maid fails. Then the people destroy her. Fierce raging fire drink charged, seized Beowulf on the neck, which did wax with soul gore seething, blood in waves boiled. Our hero, mortally wounded.
Dragons are huge, leathery, bird-like beasts, reptilian creatures with intelligence that are uniquely six-limbed, four legs and a separate pair of wings, depending on the species. Their breath was fire or frozen. They hated humans and loved gold. There are myths and stories about them in almost every culture on Earth, from Japan to Greece, revered as representative of the primal forces of nature and the universe, associated with wisdom and longevity. In some cultures, they are said to be capable of speech and taught humans to talk. Their blood often had magical or corrosive properties. The blood of the dragon in Beowulf had acidic qualities, allowing it to seep through iron. That's why his armor failed. There are theories that the sightings of living fossil pterodactyls helped to evolve the legend of dragons. Modern-day sightings of apparently extinct flying dinosaurs are well documented, though none has been captured on film or video yet. Rilke wrote, "How should we be able to forget those ancient myths that are at the beginning of all peoples, the myths about dragons? Perhaps everything terrible is in its deepest being, something helpless that wants help from us." The Ice Dragon by Oliver Postgate.
The tale of the Ice Dragon opens as Craculus comes across a very small and fierce sword-wielding individual by the name of Ronf, who hails from the Hot Water Valley. Ronf is on a mission to bring a message to Noggin from his people, so Graculus carries him to Noggin's castle, where Noggin formally receives his visitor. Noggin learns from Ronf that the people of the Hot Water Valley are being terrified by a huge dragon, and Ronf echoes his people's plea for Noggin to rid them of the terrible dragon. Noggin agrees to help, accompanied as ever by the mighty Thor Nogson and Graculus. He returns with Romp for the Hot Water Valley on a sled hauled by six strong dogs. Their long journey takes them high into the snow-laden mountains. Fearing they would get lost in the deep forest, Graculus flies above them and guides them safely through the forest into the foot of the great glass mountains. On seeing the mountains, the travelers strike camp for the night, but Graculus is haunted by distant memories that the place stirs in him. Although Graculus was hatched of an egg given to Nuka by a traitor, he is unaware of where his true homeland is. Noggin urges Graculus to fly off and confirm his suspicions that he has returned to the land of his ancestors, and Graculus duly takes to the air as the others settle for the night. The following day, as the party starts their perilous ascent into the mountains, Thor Nogson spies what he takes to be Graculus. However, the arrival of further green birds, followed by Graculus himself, confirms that Graculus has at last discovered his true home. Suspended by their climbing ropes, the birds lift Noggin and his fellow travelers over the glass mountains and deposit them safely in the Hot Water Valley. No sooner have their feet touched down than they hear the footsteps of the passing dragon. Noggin and Thor Nogson set off in pursuit, and climbing high on a hill, are surprised to find that the dragon has vanished. It is then that they notice that they are actually standing on the dragon's back. The dragon is keen to befriend the humans, but unfortunately, being an ice dragon, his breath accidentally freezes Noggin and Thor Nogson solid. However, the dragon takes them down to the hot geysers of the Hot Water Valley where he thaws them out. The dragon introduces himself as Grolliff and tearfully tells how he has recently been forced to leave his normally cold cave, it having become suddenly hot and full of smoke. Noggin agrees to investigate the problem, and the dragon flies both him and Thor Nogson up to the mouth of his cave. The brave Thor Nogson draws his sword and enters the steamy cave, where he discovers Nogbad shoveling piles of jewels and precious stones, the rightful property of the dragon's friendly society, into sacks. As Noggin grows forward to challenge the wicked uncle, Nogbad blasts him back out of the cave with a cannon. Grolliff then breathes his icy breath over the cannon, freezing it, and the adventurers, now joined by Ronf, enter the cavern as Nogbad makes his escape through a second cave and sets off for Lapland, stealing Noggin's sled and dogs. The now furious Grolliff flies after Nogbad, though, and with one icy breath freezes him in his tracks. The delighted Grolliff thanks Noggin, presenting him with a gong, and promises the assistance of the dragon's friendly society whenever Noggin might so summon it. He then settles down to sleep for 1,000 years.
This story reflects an age in which man has become the superior predator. The dragon needed human help to combat human greed, and a big gun. When we stopped believing in their power over us, dragons and other flying beasts went to sleep for 1,000 years. But we can't seem to do without them. We've kept them evolving in myth, music, and movies since that time. Godzilla. You're listening to Animal Gab Radio. Kraken, sea serpents, and water monsters, denizens from the deep mystery that is the ocean, even today has not been fully explored. The ocean was probably the most vulnerable place on earth for ancient people. Many sailors couldn't even swim and had a bleak attitude of their chances overboard. Whereas dragons can be seen coming from a distance, sea beasts have the element of surprise in their attack. Imagine how terrifying to see a huge monster breaching and rising from the waves, slimy and scaly and spouting jets of water from a tangle of writhing limbs. The huge kraken were thought to be completely mythic until giant squid of 50 feet in length were found, so it's no surprise that sea and other water monsters like the one in Loch Ness could be so prominent in history and legend. Even in the time of the Odyssey, in the 8th century BCE, sea monsters plagued the lives and bedeviled the dreams of sailors and adventurers.
In the midst of the cliff is a dim cave. Turn to the west, where you shall steer your hollow ship, glorious Odysseus. Not even a man of might could shoot an arrow so as to reach into that vaulted cave. Therein lies Skylla, an evil monster. Nor would anyone be glad of the sight of her. No, not though it were a god. She has 12 feet, all misshapen, and 6 necks exceedingly long, and on each one an awful head, and therein 3 rows of teeth thick and close and full of man dare. Up to her middle she is hidden in the cave, but she holds one head out beyond the dread chasm and fishes there, eagerly searching around the rocks for dolphins and sea dogs. By her, no sailor yet may boast that they have fled unscathed in their ship, for each head she carries off a man, snatching him from the dark. Pray the Father of gods and men do not suffer her to catch sight of you, Odysseus. You will not escape.
Among the urban legends which occupy our present fantasies are Bigfoot, Yeti, and Sasquatch. The Yeti is an ape-like creature taller than the average human who inhabits the Himalayan regions of Nepal, Bhutan, and Tibet. It is worshipped as a glacier being and a god of the hunt by many Himalayan people. In 1925, N.A. Tombazi, a photographer and member of the Royal Geographical Society, writes that he saw a Yeti at about 15,000 feet. While attempting to scale Mount Everest in 1951, Eric Shipton took photographs of a number of large prints in the snow at about 20,000 feet. Bigfoot, also known as Sasquatch, is the name given to a creature that is said to inhabit forests, mainly in the Pacific Northwest. Those claiming to have seen Bigfoot describe it as having large eyes, a pronounced brow ridge, and a strong, unpleasant smell. Because of the lack of physical evidence, scientists believe them to be an urban legend, because they would need large numbers of creatures to maintain breeding. But some people believe that Yetis and Sasquatch could be surviving remnants of a natural phenomenon. We tend to think the latest facts are the final answer, but facts are only partial glimpses of the whole truth. We like the idea of something free out there, don't we? From the Bigfoot Encounters website, Nicholas McCain tells his story of things that go bump in the night.
My name is Nicholas McCain. I grew up in Dixie, Washington. My story takes place about 7 years ago. It was early August when my friends invited me to go camping for a weekend with them. The place was in the Umatilla National Forest, about 3 miles past Jubilee Lake. Later in the evening, after eating a great meal of venison and elk and moose a friend brought, on the last day, it was just my friends, Jordan, Josh, and I. We were still awake around the fire, with a number of people sleeping around in their tents. I was resting on a cot about 5 feet away from the fire, and about 20 feet away from the edge of the woods, that soon I heard noise coming. It was somewhere around 11:30 p.m. My friend Jordan got up from his chair and walked over to the edge of the tree line nearest me. In the middle of walking past, he heard a sudden growling, snorting noise that came from about 15 yards into the trees. This was enough to startle Jordan, and he ran backwards to the fire. Josh and I were just feet within the blink of an eye, and I, without even realizing it, grabbed my knife off my side. All of us, pretty much at the same time, started looking at each other, and we started to question as to whether or not we all heard the same thing, and what could it have possibly been. Now, we all grew up in that same little town, in the Blue Mountains, and we were well aware of what kind of animals we could expect, because we'd spent many nights out in the mountains. After about a minute, Jordan and I ran back to our tent to grab a big flashlight. We inspected the woods as best we could, about 5 feet in. We saw nothing right away, and so we started smacking trees and yelling, basically making a lot of racket in case it was a cougar or something. We figured whatever it was would run away if we made enough noise and whatnot. After doing that, we made the fire up a bit bigger and made sure to have some branches sticking out just in case we had to throw them. We all calmed down after about 20 minutes or so and went back to regular chit-chat. Oh, an hour and 15 minutes goes by when, out of nowhere, and from the same exact spot, we heard a roar and a sudden smashing of what sounds like large hammers on wood and tree branches violently snapping, and a thud, 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 and then silence. In about six thuds that we were able to hear, it traveled about 35, 40 yards. While this was happening, we all stand back up and start screaming, "What was that?" Not willing to even go near to the edge of the woods. One of the people sleeping in a tent nearest everything comes bolting out, squealing her head off. And 20 minutes later, we heard the sounds like that again. Thud, thud, thud. Only further away in the distance, and seemed to be walking away. We at that point were exhausted and decided to go to sleep. It just so happened that we all were sleeping in a four-person tent, and it just so happened that that zipper on the door of that tent was broken, so it had been flapping open all night and all day. When we awoke the next day, we found that all of us had about 2 to 5 pine cones around our heads. I know the door on the tent was broken, but there's just no way we dragged in that many pine cones all the way up by our heads. I found a very large footprint outside our tent, and when examining the area where all the noise had happened the night before, there were 2 10-foot, 15-foot trees broken in 2 spots as if something had grabbed it with 2 hands and bent those trees over with ease. From here forward, I know that Bigfoot exists, and although that was a night where I was as scared as I've ever been, I must go back and search. One day, one of us who believe will get that proof we've all been searching for.
No Bigfoot has ever been known to hurt anybody. And yet humans relentlessly seek where they live and try to get proof of their existence. There are actual photos of Chupacabra, the cattle-mutilating beast of the Southwest in Mexico. They seem to exist. But nobody's looking for them. Chupacabra by the Hip Waders. You have been listening to Animal Gab Radio with special guest Debbie Twombly. Visit our page under Programs and Podcasts at coastradio.org. There are links to our social media pages and our website, where you'll find program playlists, pet photos, and health ideas for dogs and cats. We love to hear from you. Leave comments on our Facebook page or email animalgabradio@gmail.com. Our next Talk with a Tail is celebrating the holidays with your pets, fun and food, live on the Oregon coast at 91.9 FM and streaming on the web every second Tuesday of the month. Animal Gab Radio is written and produced by Asa Cody. Thanks for listening.
Even a man who is pure in heart and says his prayers by night may become a wolf when the wolfbane blooms and the autumn moon is bright.
The werewolf is a transformational monster, man to beast, the abandonment of all reason and humanity. On October 31st, 1589, Peter Stump was burned at the stake for being the werewolf of Bedburg, Germany. Thieves in those days frequently had a hand chopped off as punishment, so Stump might not have been his real name. Historical details are lurid. His was the trial of the century. He admitted to being an insatiable bloodsucker, who gorged on the flesh of goats, lambs, sheep, as well as men, women, and children for 25 years. He had a belt given to him by the devil, which allowed him to morph into the likeness of a greedy, devouring wolf, strong and mighty. It was the fact that the beast had only one paw that gave Stump away as the culprit. He confessed to killing 14 children, as well as his own son. But he is no creation of nature. Stump is the epitome of a man unbound by morality. In his madness and delusion, he felt entitled to his pleasure, regardless of consequence to others. That is truly a scary beast. To quote writer Daniel Pinkwater, werewolves are much more common than you think.
He's the lonely fear of dying, and for some of living too. He's your private nightmare brigand. You just love to turn the screw. So stand as one defiant. Yes, I'm glad your life is swell.